Today's shir is Masechta Yevamos Daf Lamed Ches, and we will begin on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, seven lines from the top. Safek v'yavam shebol lachloik b'nechsei sava. In a situation where we have this person who we're not sure is the son of the brother who passed away, or we're not sure if he's the son of the yavam, and the grandfather passed away. It means the grandfather, we mean the father of the yavam and the brother who passed away. And now the question is, we have to know who is the safek. Safek amar, the safek says, Hai gavra b'misnahu. This person, referring to himself, is the son of the brother who passed away. Upalgadidihu. For if a father dies and he leaves over, and one of his children had pre-deceased him, that child's children take the place of the father who died. In other words, if Yaakov had a son, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven died before Yaakov, so when Yaakov dies, Reuven's child or children take Reuven's place in receiving their father's, Reuven's portion, Yerusha, from Yaakov. So here we have Yaakov passing away, and there's this person who's either Reuven's child or Simon's child. He says that he's Reuven's child, and he gets an equal share in the Yerusha of Yaakov, to be shared between him and his uncle Shimon. Yavamava, however, the Yavam says, At Broid Diat, you are my son. And therefore, being you, my son, Shimon's son, a son is a grandchild. When his father is still alive, he doesn't get a share in the Yerusha from his grandfather. And therefore, the Leslach Vlaimidi, you're not entitled to any portion of the Yerusha from Yaakov. Have a Yavam Vadai. The Yavam certainly is deserving of a share. The Suffolk is only a Suffolk. That means Shimon certainly deserves 50% of Yaakov Avinu's estate. The Suffolk may be at maximum entitled to 50%, or may not be entitled to anything. And we have a rule, Ain Suffolk Maitzim de Vadai, a suffix when we have a person who may not receive something, and the other person is certainly entitled to a share, the Vadai gets the share, not the suffix, and therefore the Gemara is saying that the uncle Shimon, the brother Shimon, will get the entire portion, and the other one will get, and the suffix will receive nothing. So the Rishonim ask the obvious question. Yes, Shimon is a Vadai. Shimon is deserving of a portion of this estate because he's certainly a son of Yaakov. But the fact that he's a Vadai is only applicable to half of the estate. To that 50%, he certainly is deserving. Why are we taking that 50% and expanding it and giving him the entire estate of Yaakov? So Rashi says, since he's a Vadai for part of it, he's a Vadai for the rest. Which is difficult to understand. Just because he's a Vadai for part, is he a Vadai for the rest? So there are two approaches in the Achroinim how to explain Rashi. The Aruch HaNer says that the same taina, the same claim that he has on the first 50%, that we say he's certainly entitled to, is the same claim he has on the other half. What is his claim? That he is a son, and the only son, and therefore he's entitled to first 50% as a son, and then he's entitled to the other 50% as a son. Where do we not say that just because you have a partial taina of a vadai, does it expand to the entire claim? That's where one claim has nothing to do with the other claim. However, here, where the claim is one and the same, even though that claim will only guarantee him half of the half of the estate, it will expand to the rest of the estate. That's how Doruch HaNer explains Rashi's position. Rav Chaim Brisker explains Rashi's position as follows. Interesting approach. He says, whenever a person leaves over Yorshim, he leaves over ears, truthfully, each Yorish is entitled to an entire estate. Just what? If there are other Yorshim, they block him from receiving the entire estate. That is only relevant when the other Yorshim are certainly Yorshim. So given our example, Shimon, who is a son of Yaakov, is certainly a Yorish. This Suffolk, who we don't know his actual status, is only a Suffolk. So when we have a Vada Yorish, and as we said for Reb Chaim, every Yorish is entitled to the entire estate, only another Vada Yorish could avoid him from receiving the entire estate. In the absence of another Vada Yorish, he is entitled indeed to the entire estate. The Rishonim also go on to ask, as we learned in the previous Gemara, in the case where the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam, the Suffolk and the children of the Yavam, come to divide the estate of the Mace, then in that situation, the Bnei Yavam say, "You are brother," and the Suffolk says, "I am the child of the person who died." That Ramesharshia taught us that both of these claimants are considered Sveikis, and therefore, as we learned in the previous staff on Daf Lamed Zayin, they each get the certain portion that they each agree that they should receive. Why don't we say that this is a case of, as we just learned, a Suffolk and a Vadai, that the Suffolk, in that case, is certainly entitled to a share of the Yerusha. The children of the Yavam may not be entitled to a share of the Yerusha. And as our Gemara just said, ain't Suffolk might see me day Vadai. So answer the Rishonim, in that case, although the Suffolk is certainly entitled to a share, his claim is not a certain claim. He's not able to clearly articulate based on what he's entitled to his share. Here, however, Shimon is very clear in expressing that his share comes because he is the son of Yaakov who died, and therefore this is a case of Ein Suffolk Motzi V'Vadai, as opposed to a Mesharshia situation, which will not be considered a case of Ein Suffolk Motzim Deivadai. Tosfos has a different approach in explaining why, even though the son, Shimon, only has a definite claim on half of the estate, is he entitled to the entire estate? And he explains this the way the Aruch HaNer explains Tosfos. He says, since Shimon was a Muchzik, Shimon was always considered the definite Yorish of Yaakov. Only someone who's certainly a Yorish has the ability to break that chazaka. Given that the Suffolk is not for sure a Yorish of Yaakov, he does not have the ability to break that chazaka. Another case of Suffolk Ubnei Yavim. We have the Suffolk and the children of the Yavim, Shabo Lachloik B'nichse Saba, that come to divide the Yerusha of Yaakov. That means, going back to our situation, this is the way the Rishonim explained this Gemara, Yaakov passed away. He had a son, Shimon, who was also no longer alive, and that son, Shimon, left over two children. And we also have this Suffolk, who we don't know, is he a son of Shimon, or is he a son of Reuven? Suffolk Amma, the Suffolk says, Hahu Gavr Bamisnahu, that he is the child of the brother who died and the only child of that brother. And given that the father Yaakov had two children, Reuven and Shimon, Palgi Didihu, half of Yaakov's estate comes to me. Ubnei Yavin Amri, and the children of Yavin. And as we explained, the Rishonim explained that there are two sons, let's say, of this Yavim, say, Achuna Ata, you're our brother. And therefore you'd only deserve, that means we're entirely three brothers, and you deserve a third of the estate, not half of the estate. Minsa Islabadon, you deserve an equal share as we do. Each one of us will be three brothers. Shimon's definite two sons, and now they're claiming that the Suffolk is also their brother, so each one of us deserves a third. Half of the estate, this Suffolk agrees, belongs to the two definite children of Simon, and they take it. Tilsa, a third of the estate, the two brothers, the two sons of Simon, agree, belongs to the Suffolk. So he takes Shakal, he takes that third. Pashalo Danka. So what's left is a sixth of the estate that we don't know. Does it belong entirely to the Suffolk, or is it part of the estate to be divided amongst these three people equally? Have a mum mutba Suffolk chokim. They'll take the sixth and divide it into two. One half going to the Suffolk, and the other half going to the two definite children of Shimon. Ask the Rosh. As we learned in the previous Gemara, the children of a Yairish really take the Yairish's place. So why is this Gemara different than the previous Gemara? In the previous Gemara, we learned that if the Suffolk and the Yavam come to divide the estate of the grandfather, the Yavam gets the entire estate, as we just finished learning. So his children should be in his place. So answers the Rosh, that if the Suffolk is having an entire with the Yavam, who's saying to him, you are not a Yairish at all here. So as we learned, the Yavam, who's a Vadai, is stronger than the Suffolk, who's only a Suffolk. But when in our Gemara that we just finished learning, the Suffolk is having a dentira not directly with the Yavam, but rather with the children of the Yavam. So they're all coming to claim that they deserve Yerushas from previous generations, then that's not considered a case of Suffolk and Vadai. Another situation. Suffolk v'Yavam b'nichsei Suffolk. The Saba, the grandfather, and the Yavam are having a dispute who should get the Yerusha of the Suffolk. This person who's the Suffolk, we don't know if he's the brother who died's child, or is it Shimon, the Yavam's child, died, and he left over an estate. And there's a machloikis who he is now to determine who should get his Yerusha. Because a grandfather goes before an uncle, but a father goes before a grandfather. Suffolk v'yavim b'nechsei Suffolk. Oy sava b'suffolk b'nechsei Yavim. The Yavim dies. So first goes a son in the line of Yerusha, and then goes a grandfather. Have a mom and a mutter b'suffolk. Says the Gemara that these are situations of a mom and that money that's in doubt. And Allah in all such situations is, for Chalkim, we divide it. Ask the Ramban, why don't we say that in the case of the grandfather and the Suffolk who are arguing over the Yerusha, the grandfather and the Yavam who are arguing over the Yerusha, that we should say that for sure the grandfather is a Yairish, because he's a grandfather. The Yavam is an uncle. Doesn't a grandfather come before an uncle so that it should be considered a case of Vadai and Suffolk, and the grandfather should come first? Says the Ramban, that when we say that a grandfather comes before an uncle, it's not to mean that an uncle is not a Yairish because there's a grandfather. It means to say that the grandfather comes before the uncle, but an uncle is certainly considered a Yairish, and since an uncle is certainly considered a Yairish, they have a legitimate dispute, and the halacha is chalkin. Actually, the next Mishnah that we're going to learn is a Mishnah that's taught in Masechet Ksuvos on Daf Pei Amud Beis, and it requires a word of introduction. The halacha, as we know, is there are two stages of marriage. There's an arusa, a woman in her first stage of marriage, which she is considered an eishes ish, but she's not considered completely married. And the second stage, the second part of marriage, is nesuin. The Mishnah there discusses, we know the halacha is that a woman who has property, certainly to a great degree, that property belongs to the husband. And the Mishnah discusses that if an arusa is allowed to sell her property, and we'll discuss in a moment what kind of properties a woman has. And the Mishnah says there, the Beis Shammai says that a woman who's only an arusa, mecheres v'nesenes, she's allowed to sell her property, given that she's not yet considered married completely, she has a right to sell her property independently. Beis Shelel says she's not allowed to lechatchila. However, in mochro v'nosnav, she did sell it kayom, it's considered acceptable. Our Mishnah discusses the situation of a shemeres yavam, a woman who's not even married, she's only shemeres yavam, her husband died, she naflo lo nechasim, and she now received property. And there are a number of ways the Rishonim explain how she could have received property. Either she received property as a Yerusha, as an inheritance. She might have received property because she was walking and she found a metziah. She found something that the halacha lets her keep. She might have received a gift from someone who said that it should belong to her and not to her husband or to anyone else. So she has this property. Here, says the Mishnah, Maiden Beisham Beisilu, there is no dispute. She mecheres v'nesenes v'kayom. She has every right to sell this property. Continues the Mishnah. Mesa, if she's a shemeres yavam, and she died while she's awaiting yibum, and she has property. Mayasa b'ksubasa, asked the Mishnah, what is the status of her ksuba, or b'nechasim anechnasim v'yotzim ima? Actually, our Mishnah, explained the Rishonim, is referring to three types of property. One is the ksuba. We know that every woman, when she gets married, is entitled to a ksuba. Depends if she's a psula or a ba'ula. There's toisus ksuba. That's money that she's entitled to. Another type of property that a woman has is what's known as nichsei tsoin barzel. Nichsei tsoin barzel, which means iron, tight, means that she brings this property into the marriage and they're assessed at their value, whatever the value is. And when the marriage terminates, a divorce or by death, she is entitled to the value of those property, no matter if they are now worth more or less than they were worth at the beginning of the marriage. Then that and the ksuba are one type of property. Because those properties, what's inherent to those properties, is that they really belong to the husband. Just the woman has a lien on those properties for the ksuba. The woman has a lien on the husband's estate for the nechsei tzoyin barzel, for the value of the nechsei tzoyin barzel. But there's another type of property that a woman could bring into a marriage. And that's called nechsei meloik. Nechsei meloik is really considered hers. And if it goes up in value, that accrues to her. If it decreases in value, it's her loss. However, what is unique about the nechsei meloik is that as long as they're married, as long as this husband and wife are married, the halacha is that the husband eats the peiros, eats the fruits. If it's a tree, he eats the fruits that grow from the nechsei meloik as long as they're married. So here this woman has the ksuba, the nechsei tzoyin barzel, which are all included in the word ksubasa. Ubenechnasim anechnasim v'yotzim imay refers to the nechsei meloik. What happens to these properties? For certainly the halacha is that if a woman is married and she dies before her husband, the halacha is that the husband inherits her. The husband is her yorish. But here, she's not married. She's a shemeres yavam. Beshamay oimrim, the halacha is yechloiku yorshe habal im yorshe av. We don't know what to do with this, and it's divided between the yavam, this way most rishonim explain, between the yavam and her family. Why is her family called yorshe av? Shouldn't they be called Yorsha Isha? So the Rishonim explain, given that that's exactly the difficulty of knowing what, who, that's the difficulty facing us. Who are her Yorshim? So we don't want to use the word Yorsha Isha, because we really don't know who the Yorsha Isha are. So the question is, does it go to the Yorsha Habal, which is the Yavam, or does it go to the Yorsha Av, her family? There is a Shitas Marik, quoted by the Ramah, who says that Yorshe Habal does not mean the Yavam, but rather would mean the husband, her husband who dies, father. For as we just learned in the previous Gemara, a father comes before a brother in Yarshining, in inheriting someone. And since the Mefarshim explained the Marik, the marriage, since it's in this twilight zone, in this quasi-status, because of her unsurety, because she's still a Shemeres Yavam, so her original marriage is still considered alive, and therefore her husband's father is her Yorish. But that's not the way most Rishonim explain. As we said, we're going to learn the Gemara, Yorish Abdal means the Yavam. Beis Hillel disagree, and they say nechasim becheskasim. We follow the chazaka. Ksuba is becheskas yorshe habal, and it's completely considered by them nechasim hanechnasim v'yotze imoy becheskas yorshe av. The nechasim alug are considered to be in her estate, in her possession, in her family's possession, and will go to her family. There's also machlokes rishonim. What is this the halacha by every Shemeres Yavam? Or what would be the halacha if the Shemeres Yavam, not only is a Shemeres Yavam, but already Maimer was performed? The Baal Hamar says that once Maimer was performed, she's much more than a regular Shemeres Yavam. And therefore she's not allowed to sell her estate, going back to the beginning of the Mishnah. And the Ramban disagrees. He says it makes no difference if there was Maimer or not. Once the Yavam marries the Yavama, Harei ki ishto l'chaldava, she's completely considered his wife. Uvad, however, there is one halacha, shtei ksuba al nichsei bala harishin, the obligation, the ksuba obligation, is on the estate of the first husband. Ask the Gemara, and as the Ritva explains, the Gemara is going to be asking a question on Beis Shammai, even though we don't Paskin like Beis Shammai, we still need to understand Beis Shammai's position and opinion in our Mishnah for help us understand this entire concept of a Shemeres Yavam and her relation to the Yavam. Ask the Gemara, Mishnah Reish Lepligi, why is there no machloikis in the Reisha? Everybody agrees, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that a woman has full possession of her property while she's a Shemeres Yavam. Mecheres v'nesenes v'kayom. Or Maishno Sefer the Pligi, why in the Sefer is there machloikis between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel if what her rights are? Amu Ula, and we're going to have three ways of explaining this Mishnah. The first explanation given is Ula's explanation. Reisha the Nafluk Sheirusa. The Reisha is referring to a situation that this husband and wife never had a full marriage. They never came to the status of Nisuin. They only came to the status of Erisin. The Sefer is referring to a situation, the Nafla Kishin Nisua, they came to a full situation, they were Nisuin, the husband and wife. The Kesava Ula, and Ula holds, Zikas Arusa, Oisis Safik Arusa. If there was a husband and wife, and their relationship was only a relationship of Erisin, says Ula, and this is the basis of understanding Ula's position. Ula says we always take the marriage, the Zika takes the status of the marriage a notch down. So if their marriage was only a marriage of Erisin, and now she's a Zakuka, she has Zika to the Yavam, but it's a Zika that emanates from Erisin, so she certainly, as we have learned so many times in the Masechta, obligated to have Yibam or Chalitza, but the Zika only creates a Sufik Arusa. Zika's Nesua, and if there was a Nesuan previously, what the Zika does, it takes it a notch down to make a Sufik Nesua. That she doesn't have the full-fledged din of a Nesua, she only has the status of a Sufik Nesua. And the Gemara explains Ula's position. Zika's Arusa, if they were previously in a status of Erisin, Oisus Sufik Arusa, so it goes to a notch down, and she only considered like a Sufik Arusa. Why must Ula say that? Because if we're going to say that if there was an Erisin marriage, and the Zika creates an Erisin Zika, why would Moedim Beis Hillel Shemecheres V'Nesenes V'Kayim, that this woman has every right to sell her property, even L'Chatchila V'Tnan? We learned and we quoted this Mishnah in our introductory remarks, this Mishnah Masechta Ksuva. The halacha is, Nafla Nechasa Mishnas Arsa, if a woman is an Arusa, the halacha is, Beshama Amrim Timkar, Beshama says that since she's only Arusa, she has the right to sell her properties. However, Beshama Amrim Loi Timkar, she has no right to sell. They all do, however, agree that if she did sell the property, those sales are effective. So if she has the status of an Arusa, how could our Mishnah begin by telling us that Beis Hillel says that she's allowed to sell her property? An Arusa is not allowed to sell a property. How must we explain the Mishnah? The Zika's Arusa is a Sufik Arusa. She's only a Sufik Arusa. If she's a Sufik Arusa, their Beis Hillel will agree that the halacha is that even L'chatchila she's allowed to sell her property. Ask the Rishonim. So if she's allowed to L'chatchila sell her property, so why are we calling her a Sufik Arusa? We should call her nothing. She has no bond to her husband. So Rishonim give two answers. One answer is, we specifically call her a Sufik Arusa because we're going to call her nothing, that we may mistakenly believe that she doesn't even require Yibam Chalitza, which is certainly not true. She is certainly required to have Yibam Chalitza. Another teretz that Ritva gives, that since the halach is, as we're going to learn the next words of the Gemara, by Nesua, there is a difference if she's a Sufik Nesua. So to remain consistent, just like when we say Zikas Nesua, Oysa Sufik Nesua, we similarly say Zikas Arusa, Oysa Sufik Arusa. And now the Gemara continues, Taka, explaining the Sefer. Zikas Nesua, Oysa Sufik Nesua, it makes her into a Sufik Nesua, because the Isalka Daitach Vadi Nesua, if we're going to say that she has the status of a full-fledged Nesua, would Beis Shammai then say that they divide the estate? V'tnan, didn't we learn in the Mishnah, in Masechta Ksubis, the Nuflan and the Chosim Shanissis, if property comes to a woman after the Nesuin, Elu ve'elu Maidim Shemachar v'nosna, that if she sold those properties, Shabbat Maitzim Yad L'Kuchas, the sale is ineffective, and the husband could take that those properties away from the people who bought them. So if she's in a sewer, what's the shaila? If she's in a sewer, they certainly belong to the yavam. And if she's in a sewer, it belongs to the husband. And if we say that the zika continues that nesuin, so how would she, why would be a question on the status of that property? Al shmamina zikas nesuah oisus sofik nesuah. It creates a status of a sofik. And now we have, explains Rashi, a machloikis beishan beis hillel. What is the right thing to do? Beis Shammai says, when we have this suffix, yachloiku, they should divide it, the yorshe habal, and yorshe ha'av, And Beis Hillel says, we follow the Chazaka, and as the Rishonim explain, why do the Beis Hillel prefer that they should hold on to the, or they should follow the Chazaka? Because Beis Hillel say we always prefer that the properties should remain in the Shevet, within the Shevet, where they come from, and that's why we want everything to remain, we want to follow the Chazaka. There's a Machloikis Rashi and Tosfos, when we say here that the properties of a Shemeres Yavam, we have the Suffolk, at what point did these properties fall to her? According to Rashi, it's only properties that fell to her after she became a Shemeres Yavam. However, Tosfos disagrees, and Tosfos says that it even refers to properties that fell to her from before she was a Shemeres Yavam. Amalei Rava asks Rava on Ula's explanation of a Mishnah, if this is the explanation of a Mishnah, because we don't know how to treat the Shemeres Yavam who's coming from a marriage of Nesuin. Do we treat her completely like the Yavam's wife or not? So Adam Miflgi Bugmufu Lachamisa, why did the Mishnah choose to speak about a case where she died and we're disagreeing who is her Yorish? Let's give a Chayel Paris. We could have the same Achloikas that this Yavam is still alive, and the question is, who is entitled to the Paris of these properties if the Yavam is considered a husband? So as we said in the Mishnah, a husband is entitled to the Paris. If she on the other hand is not considered the wife of the Yavam, so he's not entitled to the Paris. Why did we have to speak specifically about a situation that she died? Therefore, Ella Maruva, Ella Marava, Rava says, "Idivi the nafalak shinasua." Everybody agrees that our Mishnah is referring, both cases our Mishnah refer to a case where she was nasua, and then her husband died. The zikas nasua, and as we learned, the zika of nasua, oisa sofik nasua, takes her a notch down to be a sofik nasua. Reisha, however, in the Reisha, the Kaima, she's still alive. Havlei Ihi Vadai, Vinu Sofik. She's certainly considered a person, the owner of this property, because it's the Nichsei Malug. And as we explained in the Mishnah, the Nichsei Malug certainly are her property. Inhu, the Yavam, is considered a Sofik, because we're not sure is she considered his nesua or not. And the halacha is, ein sofik moitz midei vadai. She is stronger because she is the vadai, and they are the sfeikas. Sefer, however, the sefer is referring to a case, the mesa, where she already died. Halol le'bon le'erish. Everybody is coming to claim that they're an inheritor. We don't know who is really the yerish, and therefore Yachloiko. So as we now understand, based on Rava's explanation of our Mishnah, the basis of our Mishnah is that we're referring to a situation that the basis of the Reisha, why she has the right to sell, because she's a Vadai and the Yavam is a Sofik, Vein Sofik Moitzi Midei Vadai. Abaya asks, is this indeed true that Beshamai ain't Sofik Moitzim Dei Vadai, and that's why in the Reisha she has a right to sell the property and the Yavam can't stop her? But Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah in Masecht Baba Basra, Nafal Abayis Olav Al Oviv. There's a father and a son, Yaakov and Reuven, are both in a house, and the house collapses and they both perish. The only question is who died first. Did Yaakov die first? Did Reuven die first? And Reuven was a person, as the Mishnah will teach us in a moment, who had a chayv, who had creditors. But Reuven had no money. So the situation here is, Nafal Abayis Olav Al Aviv. The house fell on Reuven and Yaakov, Olav Al Merishav on Reuven and someone else who he inherits from. V'hoy Olav Ksubis Ishu Bal Chayv. And Reuven was a person who had no assets at the time of collapse from where these claims could be collected. only if he was a Yairish, only if his father died first and he inherited his father's estate, does he have, at the time of death, assets from where this ksuba or these debts can be collected. Yorshe Avoimer, the Yorshim, or the father, that means his father's brothers, there are no other sons, say, Haben Meis Rishon, first Reuven died, Vakach Meiso Av, and then Yaakov died, and we are Yaakov's Yorshim, and Reuven died without any money, and you have nowhere to collect your debt from. The Baal Chayv, however, says, Hu Av Meis Rishon, the father died first, Vakach Meis Aben, first Yaakov died, and then Reuven, and therefore Reuven, at the time of death, did have something. He had the Yerusha that he received from his father Yaakov, and there we could collect that as the money owed to us. Basham says the father's Yarshim and the Bali Chayv divide the money. Ask the Gemara. Hacha, in our case, Yarshel Av Arvadai. The Yarshim and the father certainly have possession of this property. Because as the Rishonim explain, Rashi explains, even if the father died first, where, as we just explained, then Reuven's creditors do have rights to the estate, the estate is considered first to be in the possession of the Yarshim of the father. Because the Bali Chayv just can't go and take the money. They have to go through the process of collecting the money in Beis Din. So therefore, ask the Gemara, the Yorshe Av Avadai, and the Baal Chayv is a Sofik. And yet, we see the Ka'os is Sofik, or Maitzim Levadai. We see that the Baal Chayv have rights to the money here. I, according to the way Rava explained our Mishnah, Beis Shammai holds, ain't Sofik, Maitzim Levadai, answers the Gemara, this is different because Kesavar Beis Shammai Shtar Oimed Ligvois Kegavi Dami, a document that's supposed to be collected, a Shtar Choiv, an IOU, is considered already collected. It's not like they, as we explained a moment ago, because the Baal Choiv has to go through the process of going to Beis Din and then only collecting it from the Yarshim. The Baal Choiv is considered that he immediately receives it. Ask the Gemara Menot Temra, from where do we see the Beis Shammai holds the Shtar Oimer Ligvois to Govidomi? The Tanan. We learned the Mishnah Masechta Soita. The halacha is that if a woman has kinui vestira, her husband suspects that she had an adulterous relationship and goes through kinui vestira, takes her to the Beis HaMikdash, and she drinks the Mayim HaMamarim. Says the Mishnah, Meisu Baleim, but if a woman went through Kinu Vestiru before Achloi Shasu, before she drank the water, Beshamim Noitl Ksuba Veinishoisus. So they date the Ksuba, they don't have to drink, the husband's not alive anyway. Beselaimer, Oi Shoisus, Oi Loi Noitl Ksubasan. Or they should drink or not receive the Ksuba. Ask the Gemara, Shoisus, how could we even suggest that they should drink? The Torah says that a husband should be there when his wife is drinking. For Lekan, this husband died already. Ella, says Beis Hillel, since they're unable to drink, therefore, they're not entitled to the ksuba. Ask the Gemara, Vahacha, isn't this a case of Sofik? Sofik Zanoi, Sofik Loi Zanoi. We don't know if she did or didn't have an adulterous affair. Only if a woman was mezana, she's not entitled to a ksuba. So why is she entitled to collect a ksuba? Isn't it a situation of ka'osi sofik moitzim midei vadai? And we're saying that Beis Shammai holds ain't sofik moitzim midei vadai. El shmamina, how must we interpret that Mishnah? That since this woman is holding on to a ksuba, shtara oimer ligvois kegavidami, it's not considered a sofik. Because she has the shtar, and every shtar creates a situation of shtar oimed ligvois kegavidam. So Rashi, a very important Rashi in understanding this Gemara, makes a number of observation. One observation he says is, if it's a soft, why is the halacha that she should collect the entire ksuba? she should only, like we learned in the previous Gemara, she should get half the ksuba. If it's a suffix, don't we say yachloiku? So Rashi says, that's the power of shtara oimid ligvois kegavi dami, that we will not say yachloiku. However, says Rashi, if that's the case, that we're giving so much power to shtara oimid ligvois kegavi dami, then why in the previous Gemara, where we don't know who died first, did the father die first or did the son die first, the Beis Shammai say yachloiku, there too there was a shtar, and shtar oimel ligvos kegavidami should give the creditor of the son the ability to get the entire mount owed to him. Answers Rashi, in Al Gemara this woman is claiming that she certainly didn't do znus, so she's entitled to the entire ksuba, and she's holding on to the ksuba. So shtar oimel ligvos kegavidami, she gets the entire ksuba. However, in that Gemara, says Rashi, we don't know for sure what happened. No one could tell us for sure what happened. And since no one could tell us for sure what happened, that's why it's a suffik and yachloikel. So we have now a machloikis, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. According to Beis Shammai, we're saying shtar oimel ligvos kegavidami. And according to Beis Hillel, we do not say shtar oimel ligvos kegavidami. And as usual, the halach is like Beis Hillel, and the halach is shtar oimel ligvos lav kegavidami. We don't give a shtar such great power, and therefore say the paiskim lalacha. If one owns a shtar, a receivable, an IOU, we cannot use that receivable to. If we give that receivable to someone, it's not really considered we give them anything tangible, because a shtar oimel ligvos lav kegavidami. However, the Paiskim do point out there's a difference between a shtar choiv and a shtar matana. A shtar choiv, we say shtar oimel ligvos lav kegavidami. A shtar matana, the halacha is, even by Beis Hillel will agree, is considered like real, so to speak, cash. Another interesting point that the Tzais makes, that even according to Beis Shammai, that holds shtar oimel ligvos kegavidami, that's only in a shtar that has in it a chrayis nechasim. A shtar that doesn't happen in the chrayis nechasim, we don't say shtar oimel ligvos kegavidami. Ask the Gemara, Abaya asked Rava a question from the Mishnah Baba Basra. Because Abaya, let's just review, Abaya's question to Rava was, how could you say that Beis Shammai holds ain't sofik mitzim de vadai? How are we going to explain the Mishnah Baba Basra? Abaya obviously did not subscribe that Beis Shammai would hold the shtar oimel ligvos kegavidami. Asked Abaya, so similarly, Abaya couldn't have explained the Mishnah Masechta Saita that way, in understanding why this woman is entitled to the ksuba, because shtar oimel ligvos kegavidami. So therefore, asked the Gemara, if Abaya loisumaha, shouldn't Abaya have asked this question from the Mishnah Masechta Saita, which is also in Seder Noshim, rather than asking from a Mishnah Masechta Baba Basra? That from the Mishnah Masechta Saita, we see that Beis Shammai do not subscribe to the concept of Ein Sofik Mitzim Deivadai. Let's explain again why. Because Abaya does not subscribe to the concept of Shtar Oimel Ligvos Kegavidami. So therefore, that's not the reason why the woman gets the Ksuba. So if she does get the Ksuba, it must be because Beis Shammai does not hold Ein Sofik Mitzim Deivadai. Says the Gemara, the reason Abaya didn't ask for the Mishnah Masechta Saita, it says Dilma Ksubas Isha Shani. They were referring to Ksuba. And Ksuba is different from Shemchina. Machlok Shem had to explain this. Rashi says that Chazal were particularly lenient in letting women collect the Ksuba, because if women will not be able to collect the Ksuba easily, they're not going to want to get married. Other Rishonim say is we want women to be able to collect the ksubas easily, so they should have the ability to get remarried, they should have money, they should be rich widows, and men will want to marry her. Ask the Gemara, fine, we can't ask from the Mishnah Saita, because there it's a unique situation of Chinah.
But what about Ksuba de Masnissen? V'loisik Ksuba de Masnissen. Why in our Mishnah does Beis Shammai say that we divide the Ksuba? If ain't Sofik Maitzim de Vadai, how could the woman's Yorshim collect the Ksuba? And here, explains Rabbeinu Peretz, there is no concept of China. China only applies to the woman herself, that she should want to get remarried, men should want to marry her. Here, the Shemeres Yavam is no longer alive. We're only referring to the Yorshim of the Shemeres Yavam. And if Beis Shammai holds, ain't Sofik Maitzim de Vadai, why do her Yorshim get a share in the Ksuba? Answers the Gemara like Pligi. Regarding the Ksuba, there is no Machloikis in our Mishnah. Even Beis Shammai agrees that the Yorshim of the Shemeres Yavam are not entitled to a share of the Ksuba. Asked Mar Veloy, is that true? Vaptani. We learned in our Mishnah, Mesa, if the Shemeres Yavam dies, Mayasa b'Ksubasa, what's the status of a Ksuba, or b'nechasma nechnasva yotzima with the nechsimalog? And we learned, Beis Shammai, m'mech loiku, Yorshe habal, m'yorshe af. So we see that they even argue regarding the Ksuba. Says the Mahachkama. This is the way to understand our Mishnah. First, the Mishnah asks, what should be done with the Ksuba? The Shafka and the Mishnah doesn't explain what should be done with the Ksuba. It's not discussed. Then the Mishnah goes on to discuss the Nichsim Alug. And there we have Machloikis. But regarding the Ksuba, there is no Machloikis. Everyone agrees that it stays with the husband's estate because ain't Sofik Meitzim Dei Vadai. Omer Avashi, and Rashi explains, Masnisin Damideka, I'll prove to you that that's the right explanation of our Mishnah. The Tani Yechloiku Yorshi Habal and Yorshi Av. The Mishnah says that the Yorshi Habal divide with the Yorshi Av, and as Rishonim explained, the one that's mentioned second is the primary owner here. V'loi Tani Yorshi Av and Yorshi Habal. In the Ksuba, who is the primary owner? The Yorshi Habal. So if our Mishnah was referring to the Ksuba, it should have said Yechloik Yorshe Ha'av Im Yorshe Habal. The fact that the Mishnah says Yechloik Yorshe Habal Im Yorshe Av is a proof shmamina that the Mishnah is only referring to the Nechsi Melug. The Ksuba is not being discussed. In the Ksuba there is no Machloikis. It remains with the Baal. As the Aruch Haner, the Mishnah refers to both situations, to the Ksuba and to the Nichsimalug. So fine. For the Nichsimalug, the proper wording is Yorshe Habal and Yorshe Av. For the Ksuba, the proper wording is Yorshe Av and Yorshe Habal. So perhaps the Mishnah chose the wording of Yechloik Yorshe Habal and Yorshe Av because we're talking about the Nichsimalug, not to the exclusion of discussing the Ksuba. Answers Daruch Haner. The Mishnah first mentioned Ksuba. So if the Mishnah was continuing to discuss Ksuba, it should have said Yorshe Av and Yorshe Habal. The fact that the Mishnah said Yorshe Habal and Yorshe Av is a proof that the Mishnah now is only discussing the Nichsi Melug, not the Ksuba. From here we see, says the Tosfos Yeshanim, that wherever it says something im something else, the second thing is more important. So therefore he says, it says in Pirkei Avos, im. So here we see that Derech Eretz is more important than Talmud Torah. However, others disagree with the Tosfos Yeshanim, and they say as follows. Our Mishnah did not have to say the words Yechloiku Yorshe Habal im Yorshe Av. Our Mishnah could have just said Yechloiku. Our Mishnah could have just said Yechloiku Yorshe Habal vi Yorshe Av. The fact that the Mishnah added the words im, it's coming to prove that we're talking about the Nechsim Elug, where the Yorshe Av are the primary stakeholders. But, in Pirkei Avos, if the Mishnah would have just said, Yofa Talmud Torah v'derech Eretz, a person can make a mistake to teach us that the Mishnah is teaching us, we have a choice. You can follow the path of Torah, or you can follow the path of derech Eretz, which of course is not true. We have to have both. Yofa Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz, but there is no proof which is more important, the Talmud Torah or Derech Eretz. We certainly need to have both.